The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Friday, and despite the fact that we're not all on the roads and maybe headed out to eat or doing something that we normally would do on a Friday, it's been fun, man. We started the day talking about waking up and having snow, and hopefully you got a chance to enjoy it with your kids or your dogs or your family and friends. We certainly did. So it was a unique day from that standpoint because we just don't get it all the time. But lots of folks sending pictures and sending what they did today. So that's kind of cool, Micah. A unique day for us here on the show.
Yeah, I found out today, amongst other things, my dog had never experienced snow. And he was like, at first, what is this stuff? And then he fell in love with it, realized you really can't, you know, catch a snowball. You just got to eat it. And also found out that Ike is freaked out by snowmen. I posted that video. And Mike Belly, he was barking at the snowman, Carl, like it was a mailman. But other than that, we've had a lot of fun here on the south side. I'm not sure what the weather is going to be in the northern part of our metro Atlanta, but we're getting a lot of rain and wind down here on the south side in Coweta County right now.
Yeah, it is, and I'm on the north side. It is windy, and you know, with all of our trees, it's like, yo, what's going on?
I know, please don't fall down.
That wind picked up, but I'm with you. I'm just kind of, you know, paying attention. We're watching and seeing what's going to happen. Not as if we can do anything about it, but it's certainly, right. You know, you just, again, want to be aware of what's happening. And then tomorrow, I think early in the morning, again, not a meteorologist, but like 7 or 8, they're saying, like, this stuff will be blown out. And then hopefully it's still going to be cold, but, you know, we won't have all this to deal with. And so hopefully we can, you know, have a decent weekend and get past this as we get back to the work week next week. But we'll see. Who knows? Steve Koonin said tomorrow's game, as of right now, is still scheduled. So if you have Hawks tickets tomorrow for the Rockets, make sure you stay up on the website as to what's going on with them at Hawks.com. All right. Let's talk about our Falcons because we're going to talk to Bryant McFadden coming up here in less than 10 minutes. And we've been spending time today saying, hey, the Falcons process, because our general manager spoke yesterday and, you know, we gave Terry credit. He owned the disappointment and owned his own performance as far as, hey, letting us down as a fan base, and we deserve better, and he's right. But a couple other things he said that we found interesting, and one of them is, Mike, you talked about Simmons and Judon. We signed them. We didn't get what we thought we were getting. And our general manager said as much yesterday.
When you add players at that point in their career, then we're looking at, for us to make those decisions, we're saying, okay, we're in position to win the division and to make a run in the playoffs. And the fact that we're not in the playoffs, then we're not happy with the results of those decisions. That's just natural. That's not saying anything against either one of those players specifically, Matt or Justin, or anything. I'm not saying anything negative about the coaching staff or anything, but when you make those decisions, we believe that's going to be a tipping point for us, and it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Yeah, man. Now, Matthew Judon, 5.5 sacks. And, like, first, we can also argue it's not Matthew Judon's fault that they've got him covering a running back. You know, I mean, just handing the dirt back at the quarterback.
That's
but,
true.
You know, and one time it did work in the Tampa Bay game because it happened right in front of me. Judon was able to deflect a pass. You know, they were trying to get to their running back. But Judon, 5.5 sacks, 7 tackles for loss. By the way, Grady Jarrett led the defense with 9 tackles for loss on the season, doing the dirty work in the middle. But, yeah, Judon didn't bring the heat. And, unfortunately, you know, we thought with Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates, we had the best safety combination in the league. And unfortunately, there's a reason why other teams maybe weren't interested in Simmons, unfortunately. By the way, we interviewed him. Great guy. Says all the right things. He's a leader. But unfortunately, it just didn't translate to the field.
No, it did not. And that was part of the reason why, you know, we just feel the way we do about those moves. Meanwhile, Terry Fontenot also was asked about Kyle Pitts. Here's what he said is in his assessment of what Pitts did this year.
Yeah, look, when you take a player that high in the draft, obviously you expect a certain level. And we understand Kyle had a really good rookie year, and he hadn't equaled or exceeded that production since then. And so there's no excuses we're making about it. And yet right now, at this point, just like any other player, Kyle has to do everything he can do as to make sure he's doing everything he can do this offseason to get the best version of himself. We have to make sure we're supporting him and helping him develop in those areas and make sure we're doing everything to get the best out of him so he can help this team win football games.
All right, real quick. Is it wrong, because we heard his offensive coordinator say the same thing earlier in the year, we need Kyle Pitts to be the best Kyle Pitts he could be. Then we heard the coach say it to us. We interviewed him, and he said the same thing. We need Kyle to be the best. Now I'll get on my soapbox for 2 seconds. I know it's 2025 now, and you can't be mean. We really need this guy to live up to his potential. We really need this guy to live up to the player we thought he was when we drafted him. Can we just say that? Can we say, because, you know, we need people to step up, otherwise you're not going to be on this team, because if you can't help us, you're not going to be here anymore. I mean, I don't think, does that really overturn the apple cart? I know that Arthur Smith once said something about Kyle Pitts that wasn't complimentary, and he cried about it. But, I mean, I'm just so sick and tired of this. Well, we really need him to be the, no, I need Kyle Pitts to be an impact freaking player on this team. That's why I took him at 4. He's making me look like an idiot. No, he wouldn't go that far, but just a little more emphasis. How about that?
No, I don't have any issues with it. The other part that we've got to fix or at least address, and this is according to our general manager at Stoops and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour, of course, brought to you by our friends at Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives. That is the kicking game. And for those who don't know, you're like, well, it wasn't that bad. We missed a league-high 12 kicks. 12. Here is Fontenot talking about addressing that. Well, we'll hear it in just a second. But, Mike, the Kuth situation played out. It reared its ugly head, and it also played a role in that losing streak that we couldn't find our way out of and going into the bye week and all of that stuff. And, you know, that, to me, was the season. And you know, we'll look back on this 3 or 4 years from now and be like, man, you remember that year we were 6-3? Just like we did in 15 when we started 5-0 and somebody was starting to look ahead.
I always laugh when guys go, well, it shouldn't come down to the kicker. Well, yeah, the NFL, every game is generally less than 7. Every game is less than 7 points, you know, unless it's good team, bad team. And yeah, and in the case of the Saints game, it was the back in November, and that was the 2017 loss. Now, Cousins was hot garbage in that game, but Younghoe Koo misses a kick from about 36 yards, then he misses one from 45, and then he missed a 50-plus. He was 1 of 4. That was a game. We need one. Again, I don't have to remind you guys, it's a moot point if we go out there and lay the egg against Carolina that we did. Maybe they're more motivated knowing they're truly commanding their own future. But yeah, that one really hurt. The same thing goes. He missed a game. He missed a 30-some-odd yarder in the Chargers game, which would have come down to another field goal to win it. That was a 17-13 loss.
Big O, we have it now. All right, let's hear Terry Fontenot addressing the league worst kicking game.
We missed 12 kicks, and we led the league in missed field goals, and it does. It's true. It affects games. It does. And in a game of inches, it really affects us. Once Koo was injured, we obviously put him on IR. And what it's our job to do is to make sure that we're fixing that this offseason so we get into the season next year, and we're not having the same conversation. That's our job.
Yeah, but yeah. Carl, I mean, if they knew he had a leg, he had a hip problem, should you have shut him down sooner? Because this goes back to, I mean, is there a disconnect between the medical staff and the front office? I'm not trying to be a knucklehead here. I'm just saying, all we can go by is the injury report, and we found out that Koo was, they were trying to make excuse. Well, he's got an issue with the hip. Well, then bring somebody else in sooner. This gets back to the sense of urgency that was missing, I thought, at times from this organization.
Yeah, that's, again, it's not that you aren't aware. It's what do you do about it? It's like you get in your car and your light comes on and says you got a flat tire going on, right? And you go, yeah, but I'm just going to go to work and I'll worry about it later. Then you come out and you realize your tire's completely flat and now you got to call somebody. Like, you handle it. Like, you can't wait in the National Football League to get ahead of situations. And that is what you're saying. That is part of the issue. The Cousins situation where we waited, I understand that a little bit more simply because he had never been that bad. And you just go, okay, he'll snap out of it. We're going to play better this week. And you give him another week, and you give him another week, and then it came to a head. The cool thing, like, when my kicker's jacking things off, Mike, I got to get ahead of that. I got to get ahead of that.
Right. No, man, as we said, I mean, it's basically the metaphor for the Falcons season. You rip the rug out from under us. That ball is trailing from Riley friggin' Patterson. May I never speak his name again. You know, and again, this goes back to management. You got to know what your kicker's – what is his limit? Well, his limit was certainly about five – at least five more yards closer to that kick that was tracking, but unfortunately it was 8 yards short against the Commanders in a game that decided your season.
Yep. All right, hit us up, guys. We'd love to hear from you. 404-726-0929. However you're accessing the show today, we appreciate you. We hope you're listening on the Odyssey app. It's easy. You can do that every day, and you can actually rewind and hear the segments that you may have missed and the things that we talked about. Or maybe you're at home with your smart speaker and saying, hey, play 92.9 The Game. It's all good. Thank you guys for being here on a really different kind of day for most people here in the ATL and certainly around the state. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Bryant McFadden. He has a great podcast called All Things Covered. He was a corner in the league, won two Super Bowls with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We are going to look ahead to this weekend's games. We have a full slate, but I think this is going to be a fun weekend. To me, this is the best weekend simply because you get the most games, and there is a little bit of unpredictability. I mean, listen, there are favorites, and rightfully so. But once we get to the conference championship games, it becomes a little bit harder, and we only get, what, two games that day. So you get games tomorrow, two, you get Sunday, you get three, you get one Monday night, Mike. That's why I'm looking forward to this weekend.
And by the way, I just saw the over-under drop to 51.5 on tonight's game. So, Oren, let's adjust accordingly for Carl and I's picks. Thank you. The over-under is 51.5. And the other thing, you and I were talking about this earlier in the show for guys who missed it. We're doing the NFL Blitz. The only other news around the league, the Browns, Carl said it, you may never, ever see Deshaun Watson again. Certainly in the Browns uniform, if not in the NFL. He re-aggravates, tears his Achilles again. Kind of reminds you of like the Mike Soroka scenario with the Braves. I know it's apples to oranges, but he's got surgery. So he's being shut down. And it just seems like, you know, that thing. And again, that could have been us. Because somebody in our organization tried to make a play at the time for Deshaun Watson to make a trade with the Texans.
Yeah. I'm glad it wasn't. I just think you're talking about a year recovery. And he tore that thing in October. And so they were like, oh, well, he'll be back for the start of next season. Now it's January, and he just had the surgery yesterday. Right. Like, it's just unrealistic, guys. And we witnessed this with Kirk Cousins. You can tell me, oh, he's good, he's healthy. You're still going to be limited. And Deshaun Watson, part of his appeal, Mike, has always been his athleticism. So, you know, is he going to be a statue back there in the pistol? I mean, I don't know. Either way, I think the Browns have to draft a quarterback now. I absolutely think they have to.
Hey. And by the way, and Mike Evans has been a one-man gang for Tampa Bay since he's come back from the injury. The big thing is Marshawn Lattimore. Remember they traded, the Commanders traded for Lattimore from the Saints, and then he couldn't stay healthy? Apparently he will play against the Buccaneers for the Commanders. We mentioned that Antoine Winfield will be back for Tampa Bay, but there's so many exciting matchups. I think the only one I think you and I feel might be a one-sided game. No one's given the Broncos a chance against the Bills, but almost every other game this weekend should be close.
I think so, too. All right, we'll take a quick break. We're coming back. Bryant McFadden will join us. We'll talk to him about this weekend. Stay right there. It's Dukes and Bell. But right now, we got to talk to our man, Bryant McFadden. He is a two-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is also a CBS NFL analyst, does a great podcast as well called All Things Covered. B, I want to start with the Falcons and kind of recap with that before we get to this weekend's games and get your opinions. So frustrating to see the season end the way it did. What's your evaluation of the Falcons, the way things were handled this season, Raheem Morris, just the whole kit and caboodle?
I have mixed views. I have mixed views because to be, 6-3 in the first 9 ball games, to have complete control over the division, just to see it all squander away in the last month of the season is disappointing. It's disappointing. But we did see some good things from the Atlanta Falcons. Number one, Michael Penix Jr., he looks like he's QB1. I mean, in the short sample size of what we've watched with him. He can sling it. The moment never was too big for him. That's a bright spot. I think moving forward, when you talk about Coach Raheem, you know, being at the helm this season, he went through some growing pains. He has to learn. I think clock management is an issue. I think he has to become better in that area. And also, too, I think he needs to become better at making, you know, decisions that might not be seen as the best thing in terms of what the masses might say. Because one would say, and you guys could correct me if I'm wrong, if he made the move to start Michael Penix sooner than what he did, the Falcons probably would have got into the playoffs. Now, there's a lot of ifs, right? If hindsight was 2020, we'd all be in a better position. But just the look out of things from what I watch, from my view, you know, those are my sentiments.
Yeah, that's the thing, B. We had some moments, and no one could ever have ever foreseen Kirk Cousins falling apart the way he did. But there were still moments to get the game back. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about those, you know, decisions in the Commanders game. But even though you did have a slim chance and you needed the Saints to win, I just think that's the worst possible taste you could leave in the fans' mouth, is to look that bad on defense in the last game of the season.
To Bryce Young.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. Now, Bryce Young has been playing inspired football since returning in the starting lineup. But you cannot allow Bryce Young to look like Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen. No, not in a win-or-go-home scenario, right? Everything was in the middle of the table. Now, you still needed some help, and you didn't get the necessary help that you needed. But what if you did? Right? To your point, fans usually, you know, the last thing they see is the last thing they talk about. And for Atlanta Falcons fans, you talk about having a letdown loss at home to the Carolina Panthers led by Bryce Young, where he just was unstoppable in a game in which you needed to win.
All right. And look, we can talk about whether they would have or should have fired coaches. They didn't. Terry Fontenot spoke to the media. We're just wrapping up our Falcons conversation here with BMAC before we talk about some of these games, the wild card weekend. But what did you think there? Would you have moved on from any of these guys, specifically Jimmy Lake?
No. I think it was a learning experience for everyone, all parties involved in terms of the staff. Like I said, we've seen some good things, right? You look at the offense. You got young studs on the offense that will play together for quite some time. Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Michael Penix. That's a big three you can build around offensively. And you add a weapon, another weapon or so. All right, you like that. Defensively, I think that was the bigger surprise in terms of the letdown of performances on that side of the ball. You have to continue to add talent on that side of the ball to be relevant. In terms of the coaching, like I said, it was growing pains, but I don't think making a necessary move and firing, you know, any significant individual in terms of the staff, that's probably the way to go. Unless you're telling me option B is better than option A. And if you look at the entire landscape of the NFL, there are so many vacancies, you know, in terms of head coaches, in terms of GMs, in terms of coordinators. There's only a few good individuals that can fill those vacancies. And if you're Atlanta, the thing about Atlanta is that every year, until we see otherwise, you're in a winnable division. So you're only a player or so away from winning the division. You know, we saw that last year. You know, we saw that the year before. So if you can just kind of continue to add and learn from the experiences from this season, you should be in a better spot next year.
Hey, let me throw a crazy idea. It's Brian McFadden, Georgia's guys, two-time Super Bowl winner. We'll talk about his Steelers in dangerous ground coming up in a minute. But here's the deal. They said that Raheem Morris, I asked him the question. He said, I work in all areas. But there was reports he got more involved with the defense. We got better at getting the quarterback on the ground. He was a really good DC with the Rams. And he doesn't talk to anybody on the sideline. So why don't we make him the head coach and defensive coordinator, B? How's that?
I mean, I'm okay with that. If that can make the defense and the team better, no question. Let's look at some coordinators that actually are the head coach, but they call plays. Kevin O'Connell, right? Sean McVay, you know, Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniels. Now, the one caveat is what? All of those coaches call the offensive side, right? We rarely see a head coach who is a defensive-minded guy call plays on the defensive side. Now, we've seen instances happening where a head coach takes over the play calling on the defensive side, but starting out with that title from day one, we rarely see it. But to your point, if he is the best defensive-minded guy on the team and you have issues, no question, just take over, because that's how you got the opportunities you receive, is by being a defensive-minded guy.
All right, B, let's talk about these games in order here. We had a few minutes with you. Saturday, Chargers at Houston. I like the Chargers. It's a three-point game as we speak. Chargers are favored by three. And then we got Pittsburgh at Baltimore. Let's start with the Charger game.
I love the Chargers as well. I'm right there with you. I actually have them included in my parlay. I have the Chargers. I have two parlays going, matter of fact, for the listeners checking in. I have the Chargers winning money line parlay, and I have a teaser with the Chargers getting plus three. But I have the Chargers because they've been playing really, really good football, and I feel like in terms of playoff atmosphere, you don't want to go into the playoffs kind of limping. Yes, Houston beat the Tennessee Titans in the final week of the season, but outside of that, you guys saw the struggles. They can't protect their quarterback. It seems like C.J. Stroud has taken a step or two in the wrong direction this season, and just the chemistry and efficiency hasn't been there. And Coach Harbaugh is a heck of a coach. What we're seeing with his team doing more with less, that's been overly impressive. And I like the Chargers because they go into this ball game with a lot of confidence.
What about this Steelers game, man? I know that Lamar Jackson is always seems to be extra added pressure because, you know, he's still got to get to the Super Bowl. He's been a two-time MVP. The only thing missing from the resume is the title for the Charm City. And the Steelers, and legacy on the line for Tomlin. I think a lot of folks are starting to get a little antsy about Mike Tomlin and what doesn't happen there.
You know, well, Pittsburgh Steelers fans are spoiled, Carl and Mike. They're spoiled. Like, they, it's only one solution. That's competing for championships. And unfortunately, they haven't been close. And we've seen moments where they look like a competitive championship-caliber team, but we've seen more moments where they don't look that way. And how many times have you seen a team go into the playoffs in the midst of a four-game regular season losing streak? Right? You don't see that. So for Pittsburgh, I'll say this much. If you had to pick your opponent and you couldn't pick Houston, I think they would pick Baltimore because of the familiarity of that side, you know, playing against them and having success against Lamar Jackson. But this is a big moment for both sides. Lamar Jackson with the regular season of success, but postseason success hasn't been there. And the Pittsburgh Steelers under Mike Tomlin, they haven't won a ball game, playoff game, since 2016. Since 2016. And that's not acceptable, and that's why a lot of fans are in an uproar. I can tell you this much, though. Two things are going to happen in that ball game: either Pittsburgh going to win, or they're going to get blown out. I don't see any in between where it's a close game. That's how I feel. And because of that, I excluded them. I excluded this game out of my parlay ticket, by the way, because I cannot be financially involved in a game with Pittsburgh and emotionally involved. That won't be good for my health.
No, it's not. Let's talk about Sunday. Denver at Buffalo. I like Buffalo. Green Bay at Philly. Yep. I think Philly's better. And Washington is my upset at Tampa. Tell me what you think.
I love it. I have Buffalo in that same parlay that I included the Chargers. I have the money line in the money line parlay, and I have Buffalo getting like a point and a half in my teaser. I love Philadelphia as well. Now, I'll tell you this much with Philly. Jalen Hurts, the last time we saw Jalen Hurts, he went to sleep. Like, how is he? Like, is he ready to go? Like, you know what I mean? Because the one issue with Philly, they've been getting off to slow starts. They've been finding ways to win and doing so with style points, but you don't want to get off to a slow start in a playoff game. So that's my concern about the rhythm, and will he jump right back in the saddle like he did before he went to sleep? But I do have Philly in that same parlay teaser. I got Philly getting 3 points in my teaser, and then I got the straight up getting a money line. And then with Tampa, that's an intriguing matchup too. I have Tampa money line parlay, and then I have Tampa getting 3 points as well in my teaser. I like Tampa in that game too, guys, because Baker Mayfield, we can talk about how good Jaden Daniels have been, but what about Baker? Like, Baker threw 40 touchdowns, guys.
Right?
40 touchdowns and completed 70% of his passes. Baker has been outstanding. Now, which quarterback is going to outplay the other? I think that would be the deciding factor in that Commanders-Bucks game.
And they get Antoine Winfield back. So he's been out, and he's back for Tampa Bay as well on the defensive side. And then finally, you got the
if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Good pull. The strangeness of having to relocate to Arizona for the Vikings and the Rams. It's not like there's any home field advantage for the Rams anyway, because they never sell out. It's always the visiting fans. But do you feel Sam Darnold? I mean, we talked before you came on about how Sam Darnold was a bit, you know, I don't know. They got to him and they really created him some bad throws. Can the Rams do likewise against the Vikes?
Yeah, and think about this, guys. When you look at the entire playoffs, all the quarterbacks in the playoffs, it feels like Sam Darnold is the one the fans trust the least. Like, you're waiting on Sam Darnold to flatline and get back to being the old Sam Darnold. It was like, and to your point, he kind of reverted back to the old Sam Darnold last week against the Detroit Lions, right? But right. To your point with the relocating this ball game, I don't think it affects either side, especially with the game being played Monday. So travel-wise, you know, Minnesota, they're not traveling until Sunday. It's all about, you know, the adjustments, because we saw this matchup early in the year. You know, the Rams kind of, they had a field day. Matthew Stafford outplayed Sam Darnold, and you know they made Sam Darnold look like a pedestrian in terms of what he did numbers wise. But I'm going to side with Minnesota, guys. I think I'm going to side with Minnesota, and because they kind of got kicked in the mouth last week, and usually that kind of wakes you up. You know what I mean? We didn't see Justin Jefferson doing Justin Jefferson-like things. The same could be said for Jordan Addison and T.J. Hockenson, and that's the one sweet spot against the Rams' defense. You can have success against their secondary if you can hold up just long enough with their quarterback in the pocket. So I have Minnesota in that one. And like I said, money line Minnesota in my tease, I have Minnesota getting 3.5.
Good stuff. B-Mac, man, enjoy the weekend. Be safe and appreciate you as always. Enjoy the games, brother.
All right, thank you for having me.
Good stuff.
That's our man. Yeah, man, B-Mac's on it. And you and I were just talking about it. We did our pick segment a couple hours ago. I know you liked the pick. You didn't jump on it, but I took the Rams getting the 2.5 because, like everybody else, like B's head, waiting for the other shoe to drop with Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I like the Rams. I think, you know, when we said, I don't know, 4 or 5, maybe 6 weeks ago, when healthy, Mike, they're one of the best teams in the NFL. And they finally got healthy, and they got Puka Nacua and all their guys back, and all of a sudden now, heading into the playoffs, this is a dangerous team. And I think it's a dangerous game for the Vikings. Like, all those wins are great and woo-woo at home. I don't know if they do that this weekend. I'm kind of with you on this. I like the Rams to just win the game outright, to be honest. So we'll see what happens. Appreciate B-Mac stopping by. Hey, John Fricke's coming up at 7 o'clock. But before we get to that, our final thoughts on tonight's college football playoff matchup next. Last night, he makes the ill-advised throw that was intercepted by Christian Gray in Penn State territory late in the fourth quarter, and Mitch Jeter hits the 41-yard field goal. Again, Penn State was up 10-0 in this game and allowed Notre Dame to crawl back in it. They showed a little resiliency, and they were tough-minded. Marcus Freeman, first black head coach, again, to lead a team to the sports national championship game. That's a statement. And they asked him about it last night, and he was like, yeah, it's great, but look, this isn't about me. And I thought Notre Dame, you know, and their fans reacted accordingly. What are we going to get tonight? Mike, it feels like Ohio State has transformed over the last few weeks. Right? It's kind of like, okay, we knew they were a good team, but they've kind of taken the next step. Meanwhile, let's be honest, Texas beat Clemson. That was a home game. They struggled in a double overtime game against, you know, Arizona State, where they only rushed for 50 yards. Like, that's concerning to me.
You know, instead of hook them, it's almost like blank around and let's find out is the motto for Sarkisian. You know, in Texas, they just seem to be the superior team talent-wise and just seem to let the other team hang in there. Now, look, we've talked about Georgia. You said it. Ohio State will be the second-best defense that they've faced since Georgia. But, you know, Georgia kept giving them opportunities. Carson Beck, part of the reason, amongst others, with the injury, he's going back to college football, not going to the draft, is, you know, his stock took a dive because he gave Texas every opportunity that first game in Austin to go win that game, or at least keep them in it, but they just couldn't respond. I want to see Quinn Ewers get back to being a legitimate NFL talent. I mean, it's not going to happen over one night, but that's a guy to me, Carl. I don't see him as an NFL player. I think Quinn Ewers, the fourth down against Arizona State, that's going to, you know, live in Texas lore, and that was a huge moment. That's also a safety who got sucked in, and I don't know what the hell he was looking at, but I mean, you could argue that Arizona State probably could have won that game. Quinn Ewers has got to be better. There'll be a lot of Texas fans, if they don't win the national championship this year, going to say, there's moments you really wanted some Arch Manning. And you want to see that, you know, the run game. I think they got to lean on that run game a little bit more. You got to take away that dynamic wide receiver quarterback combination from Ohio State. But I don't know, Texas just, you know, they've got the talent, Carl. They just don't never seem to give you the four quarters.
Yep, that's been the issue. And that's why I say there's been a transformation. That's the word I'll use, with Ohio State. Guys, they lost two games this year. Matter of fact, they lost to Michigan, which was an average team, if that. So, you know, you see that, and you
at home is a double digit favorite.
Yeah. How do they play so well against Tennessee? They beat them by 25. How do they play so well against Oregon? 41-21. That's what I mean. So whatever it is that they needed to put together, and Mike, you said this. Listen, Texas has a dynamic wide receiver in Golden. But I don't think he's as good as Ohio State's wide receiver, Jeremiah Smith. Listen, he was the number one receiver coming out of high school. He's lived up to the expectations. In these big games, 13 catches, okay, 290 yards combined the last two games. Four touchdowns, Mike. We always talk about, like, you can catch all the balls you want. Are you catching touchdowns? This kid is showing up, and I think he's a problem, and you have to double him, okay? You're going to have to double him, or he can beat you. So I just think, like, that, to me, defensively, you got to get some turnovers. You got to create some things that Texas has not been able to do. And if they're able to, then maybe you don't have to rely on Sark screwing this up late in the game. And that sounds like a personal deal, but it is. That's how I feel.
Right. And, you know, I'm not going to say that, you know, Texas is soft because, you know, they got that talent. You just talked about it. But, you know, you got 1,800 yards of rushing between Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. They got guys. They got dudes.
Yeah.
I wonder if Ohio State leans into the physicality and then play action, then sets up Jeremiah Smith. I mean, easier said than done. But Will Howard, I was not impressed with Will Howard for much of the season until all of a sudden Ohio State got onto this thing. And, look, Indiana, that was cannon fodder, and they did what they should do against them. But that game against Oregon, you know, unless Oregon and Dan Lanning's guys are a total fugazi and all that nonsense that was made up about the 12 men on the field and being so smart to take that penalty. I mean, Ohio State just looks like they look like an NFL team in that Rose Bowl, if we're honest. So that's one I'm curious about. Real quick, just to double down on last night and Penn State, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You and I were talking about it earlier, and I finally got a chance. I've been talking about it, and I finally read the whole article in The Athletic. And basically, the article comes out and says that Marcus Freeman was really getting irked with the crap that James Franklin was throwing around at the, because, you know, you have all these pre-game, you know, press conferences and meetings, and basically James Franklin throwing a lot of shade about, oh, you're so young, and when did you get your job, and your hairline, and even though some guys would say, look, it's just nonsense and banter, that Marcus Freeman took that to his team and said, look at this son of a blank, you know, and the team reflected on it and thought about it and said, yeah, let's go kick their butts. So, look, Penn State had moments, quarterback played tight, the team played tight, a reflection of James Franklin, and Marcus Freeman, to me, is playing with house money and they're physical. I'm not sure they can win a championship against whoever wins tonight, but I just thought it was interesting that Freeman really took what, and I thought Franklin was jive, and it's almost like Franklin trying to act like Freeman's a little brother.
Right, right, and that's personal. You can try to be tongue-in-cheek, but it became that. Mm. The physicality you mentioned about Ohio State, in the Penn State game, when Ohio State beat them on the road, it was 2013. They leaned into that, Mike, and they finished that game just running the ball down their throat. And that's right. A good Penn State defense. And your point is, That I mean, like, I remember watching that game and I was like, okay, this is as impressed as I've been, because we always talk about it. You're on the road. It's, you know, tonight again, it's the Cotton Bowl. It's different, but you are technically on the road. This is not a home game for you, but it's late in the game. You're up by a touchdown or less in most cases. How do you finish these games? See, this is why I fought Franklin last night. All you needed was a field goal to finish that game and put your team in the national championship. And you leaned in to a quarterback who hadn't performed like you wanted him to at the end of the game, but yet you know, you're like, oh, we'll be fine. What Ryan Day did in that game against Penn State, and I'm just bringing this up to compare to what you're saying before we get out of here with Texas tonight. If they are up in this game, I don't know, 3, 4, 6 points, look for them to run the ball late and just use that physicality. And that's how they finished the game against Penn State. And I was impressed. Like, Penn State couldn't get off the field. They couldn't stop them on the first down. And they just ran clock, made them run their timeouts, and then they left. It was like game over. That could happen tonight if, in fact, Ohio State is in that position. And I'm getting back to your point about the run game.
And Penn State, by the way, with James Franklin, you mentioned that Ohio State game in Happy Valley. Remember that sequence on the goal to goal, and they couldn't get it in the end zone,
blew it,
and it was like,
yes.
They basically go, you know, let's run left, let's run left. It was so predictable. I just and I don't want to compare, because James Franklin couldn't handle Mark Richt's jock, but there is a feeling of James Franklin is kind of Mark Richt like in the sense that you've got the talent, you're at that level, but, like, you know, you just can't seem to punch it through. two, and unfortunately for Mark Richt, the best opportunity was that 2012, you know, SEC championship against Alabama when Todd Grantham couldn't figure out Alabama's run game, and whoever won that game was going to stomp Notre Dame. But yeah, it's just Franklin. You just have that impression that Franklin, literally, if he owned a funeral parlor, nobody would die when it comes to like the big game. So he's never going to get there.
Hey, as we head to the weekend, Mike and I are back on Monday, 2 o'clock, talking about all of this stuff and what happens coming off of a big wild card weekend in the NFL. By the way, we mentioned this because, you know, we have a connection, Atlanta does, with Thomas Dimitroff. Mike, he continues to interview for jobs around the NFL. He did a virtual interview today for the general manager's job of the Titans. Mm. Again, well, don't Thomas, know if Thomas is going to get a job.
Yeah. Thomas did a great job, but the thing is, you know, remember, he leaves in 2020, so it's almost 4.5, 5 years that he's been out of the game. So I thought, you know, he did a little bit of NFL Network, and, you know, like, we have respect for Thomas, and, you know, the more I see Terry Fontenot draft, the less critical I am of Thomas Dimitroff. But both guys had a struggle with trying to find that pass rush consistently and working in the trenches, although I think, look, I got no beefs with Fontenot on the offensive side. And same thing, remember, Dimitroff was so good at skill position. He was always good with defensive backs, you know, drafting, you know, guys that could certainly, you know, make things happen. But you just never seemed like you could consistently get the, you know, get the quarterback on the ground. That's been our franchise's problem. But getting back to Dimitroff, look, he certainly knows what he's doing. He came from that Patriots, you know, coaching tree. That's why, you know, Arthur Blank's always been obsessed with the Patriots. We were so close to Belichick. But I don't know, maybe did he miss his window? Did he need to be, you know, back in it sooner than, because this is really the first time we've heard, you know, Dimitroff getting his traction name in the recruiting, in the cycle.
That's right. Yeah, because you mentioned it. I mean, literally 4 cycles have gone by. Now, if he just wanted to chill the year after he got fired here, we understand that. A lot of coaches just take a year off, but then you got to jump back in, and he took a while off, but we'll see. So he interviewed for the Titans job. There are 3 GM's jobs open, right?
Right.
We're talking about Raiders.
Raiders. Telesco got yesterday, right? Right.
Yeah.
And by the way,
well,
we mentioned this. And we mentioned this earlier for guys who missed our college football report. Just for dog fans who, you know, maybe you've been, I don't know, hopefully you're not on the road today because it's getting sluggish out there. But we talked about Carson Beck making it official. We had the story yesterday, but it's official today that he's going to Miami. And according to reports from the Miami Herald, it's basically the same NIL money he was making at Georgia. They're guesstimating he was making $4 million at Georgia. He's making $4 million in Miami. And he's going to try to certainly kind of resuscitate whatever some fans or, you know, more importantly, NFL personnel people thought about him and try to get himself in that first round or maybe the first half of the first round in 2026.
All right, we got to get out of the way. John Fricke's got the night show. Let's clear our throat. Thanks to Bryant McFadden, also Steve Coonan, stopping by again. Hawks fans, if you have tickets for tomorrow, make sure you stay up on the website, and they will let you know if that game is going to be played or postponed. But right now it's scheduled to play, and hopefully, you know, the weather gets better and people can get on the roads. Either way, if you have tickets, stay tuned for that. All right, should be a fun weekend, and we got it. We got it all for you right here. We are your home for the NFL. We're carrying these wild card games, guys, so you can tune in if you're out and about or maybe just, you know, getting out of the house for whatever reason. If you're able to, make sure you tune in to 92.9 The Game. Hey, thanks to Big O. Enjoy yourself tonight, man, after you get done with Fricke. Appreciate you being here. Turtle, great work today. Appreciate everything that you did and considering the weather situation. Everybody, thank you guys. We appreciate you. All right, Mike Bell, let's get out of the way, man, and clear out, throw.
Hey, man, we all love the NFL. Going to be a monster weekend. Saturday, Sunday, Monday night football. and these games matter to get to the Super Bowl. So let's have the best referees out there. And once again, Carl, remember, fans, the NFL doesn't use the highest-ranked crews. They take that continuity and that teamwork, and they blow it up. And they take the best line judge and the best backfield judge, and they throw all these guys together who hadn't worked together all season. So you get the, quote, all-star officiating crews, which leads to some terrible officiating, like the Rams-Saints a couple of years ago. Why does the NFL do that? Take the best crews and keep them alive, send the bad crews home? Makes no sense.
You know, it's all English. The Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Saturday.
Never.
Thank you, Apollonia.
Football. Never enough football. Hey, I just got one thing before we get out of here. Sark, don't screw it up. Hey, if you love the show,
you tell your friends.
If you don't,
your dog is scared of snowmen.